Mr. Morrison, how are you?
How's it going?
Great, man. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain.
Yeah? Busy down in Toronto?
Yeah, pretty busy. Got one more day, then we're out of here.
Yeah, where are you? Where is the, do you guys got like a warm-up tournament and then the big tournament, or?
Yeah, we have a tournament in Spain, like next week, or like this weekend. We go to Italy for a couple exhibition games, and then we go to Greece for the Worlds.
All right. All right. Well, I've got a few questions lined up, but that was one of them about the Canadian. Is it the junior men's national team? It's still under 19s.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's going pretty well. And you said so. You got some tournament in Spain, and then Italy, and then the championships are in Greece.
Yes.
All right. So who do you and? Have the pools been all released and all like that? Like, will you be up against the U.S. or any big powerhouses to begin with?
Our pool is Australia, Slovenia, and I think Italy.
Okay.
Sorry, no. Australia, Tunisia, and I think Italy.
Okay. So maybe Australia would be the strongest out of those, or would Italy pose a threat as well?
I'd be shocked if Australia wasn't the strongest.
Yeah. Right on. And is there any kind of upcoming Canadians? I mean, I'm sure people in those loops know, but maybe, you know, who do you think the next big names for Canada are going to be?
Yeah, well, one's Jamal Murray, but he's not he's actually got called up to the Pan Am Games team. Pan Am Games are in Toronto next month.
Yep.
He was slated to be our starting guard, but he called him up kind of thing. And I'd say Dylan Brooks, who just came off a freshman season at Oregon. He was top scorer at the FIBA qualifiers last summer. Mm-hmm. He's pretty tough. He's coming off injury, but we expect him to be playing by the time we get to the World Championships. And the next guy is probably Rowan Baird Jr. He's playing on the cadet team. He's a young cadet. He had 20 and 7 against the U.S. last night down in Argentina.
Wow.
But he's, depending on who you listen to, he's top two or three players in his class in the world.
Wow. And he's coming out of Ontario?
Yeah. His dad is the assistant GM of the Canada basketball. He's played in the national team.
Oh, wow. Okay. Impressive.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
So, Scotty, I guess, I mean, a lot of people, I mean, people in Thunder Bay and at Lakehead have been watching your progress very intently and have a lot to be happy about this season, as I'm sure you yourself have. I mean, what have you thought about this season in Maine? It's been quite a blockbuster year and quite a debut and entry on the scene there.
Yeah, you know, I just went there. My intention was to work as hard as I could and just prove that, you know, I belonged and that the Celtics didn't make a mistake in hiring me. My goal was to just be strong in player development and run a good program there that Boston felt comfortable using for their young players, whether it be a James Young who ended up playing 19 games for us or a Dwight Powell out of Toronto who played 4 games before Boston traded him to Dallas. Or whoever they sent down or up to Maine. And I think we did a good job with that. We had a plan going in with our player development. We stuck to it, and I thought the results followed suit. The players improved. We had 0 players on the top 30 kind of prospect list from the D-League to start the season.
Yeah.
And then we ended up with 2 guys called up, and I think 3 more guys finished the season on that top 30 list. So guys definitely worked hard, and I thought we provided a good environment for them, and that was kind of the goal going in. And the rest of the stuff, like, you know, the accolades and the success that our team had was kind of just gravy. It was great to have it, but at the end of the day, it wasn't our main goal and just a nice piece for the resume or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah, it must be, you know, a different challenge as a head coach, not really knowing you know, week to week, who you're going to have to work with. I mean, you probably have some notice, but it could, I'm sure you probably got phone calls the day of or the night before saying, yeah, we need this guy, or this guy's getting called up for a couple games, or what have you. What was it like kind of dealing with that day-to-day changing roster?
Yeah, that happened quite a bit. I mean, there was probably four or five times where we'd be heading into the pregame shoot in the morning of a game day and get a call saying either we were getting someone and they would have to play this many minutes or try to play that many minutes, or the opposite, where we were expecting to have someone in the lineup and either they get called up or recalled, or we even had a couple guys get traded this year, which was a new thing for me, having to tell a guy he got traded and then having to deal with a new guy coming in and having to play right away. I think I was fortunate to have a year when I was helping out the year before in Maine, just to see how kind of the thing works and how the challenges present themselves. And going into the season, we set a goal of trying to keep things simple and just doing the best we could with simple things so that when a guy came in fresh, he could easily pick things up and we wouldn't have to miss too many beats. The other goal was to keep our stuff similar to Boston so that if, again, a James Young or a Dwight Powell was sent up to Maine to play, that he could slide in on a game day and not have to learn any plays. He already knew the plays, and that was a successful, to me, a successful way to go about things.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, getting your feet wet with, you know, scouting and player development last year was a real help in the head coach role this year, just kind of learning the systems and the ins and outs and the day-to-day routines. Were you surprised this year at, you know, sort of the change in, well, probably a big change in schedule, life on the road and whatnot, but, you know, you seem to have handled it well. Was there any big surprises or pleasant surprises along the way becoming the head coach this year?
Well, I mean, it was nice to be in that role. That's the kind of role that I'm used to. I think I do a good job as an assistant, and I would know my role if assigned that position, but I'm comfortable kind of managing the whole team or organization. In college, you'd call it a program, but organization, I guess, in the pros.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily ready for the travel. The travel was tough, especially for us. We had a kind of an easier travel schedule at the start of the season, and then out of our last, whatever, 19 games, I think we were on the road for 13, and we were on the road for something like 23 days in March. You know, a lot of flight delays and bad weather, you know, throughout the winter. But I remember the first thing I told the team after we picked the final team was that the season was going to be full of adversity. And just when you think that something's going to go right, it's probably going to go wrong. And that wouldn't be an excuse, both for the team's success and also for the development of each individual player. And I was able to re-quote myself several times during the season. And I definitely give our players credit. They handled it well. And as a staff, we tried to stay positive, at least in front of the players. When we were all together, it was positive, and these are just challenges that were going to make us better. And for the most part, that's how our team handled it, and that made it a lot easier for me.
Yeah, because you guys finished the season quite impressively. I mean, I looked at the last 10 regular season games. I think you won 9 out of your last 10. Yeah, so I mean, it was quite the finish to the season. I mean, I know you didn't get the result you wanted in the playoffs there. You know, you had a close first game, losing by one. But you know, it must feel overall positive, and you know, there's another step to take next year.
Yeah, I thought we peaked at the right time, and I did think we handled that last month pretty well when we were on the road, finished strong, we were able to get the number one seed overall. Obviously, we were hurt. Our top player, who ended up being named MVP of the D-League, was called up right before playoffs.
That was Frazier?
Tim Frazier, yeah, was called to the Trailblazers. So that didn't help us, but that's kind of what we're there for. If a guy gets called up, that's really the best thing that can happen when you're in the D-League. So we moved on. We still could have won some games in the playoffs, but kind of ran into some cold shooting and lost two close games to Fort Wayne, who were the defending champs. And at the time they beat us, they had gone 8-0 in their last 8 playoff games. I think they went 10-0 before they lost in the finals this year, but definitely no chopped liver of a team to lose to. And I think if we were full strength, we would have would have made a good run. But like I said, that's kind of the nature of the league, is that if you do well, you're going to lose players, and that's what we aim to do.
Yeah, because it seemed like looking down the season of results, there was so many close games. It seems like there's no, there was very few blowouts on the year. You know, it was always, anywhere from 5 points to 1 point victories or the other way.
Yeah, it's one thing I learned about the pro level, whether it be the D-League or the NBA, is actually kind of the exact same, is the least safest place to be is with the big lead in the first half. If you let down for a minute, these guys are so talented, they can put points up quick, they can get hot, and all of a sudden a 15 or 16-point game is a 3-point game. And down the stretch, if you tighten up a little bit, it's going to come down to the wire. And it's tough because you got 50 games, and I don't know how many of our games were close, but there's very few blowouts. There's a lot of buzzer beaters or buzzer losers.
Yeah.
And, it's tough on the nerves, but makes it fun, too. And we were just lucky this year that we get to win more than we lost of those close games. And that's mostly credit to the players that we had.
Yeah. I saw an article on ESPN. It was probably about 10 days ago about the rebirth or the explosion, let's say, of the three-point shot, and how successful teams are shooting more and more threes. This year was with Houston shooting three so much, or relying on it, and as well as Golden State for that matter. I'm not sure if you had a chance to see that article or not, did you?
I did see it, yes. I didn't quite read it all, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's no secret that you've been a fan of the three for a long time now.
Yeah. It's actually a great fit for me. Our GM in Maine, Dave Lewin, who's the director of scouting for the Celtics, he has kind of two hats, and one of his hats is to run our team in Maine. And, him and I kind of hit it off last season because we share some of the same philosophies. We really just are looking for layups or threes. That's basically all we're looking for. Those are the highest statistical percentage shots, the highest value. A lot of teams aren't buying into that 100% yet. Some teams are, but I think that this year in Maine was a good example of what you can do if you take that philosophy. We didn't have the most talented players, but we had kind of the right pieces. We had guys that could get into the paint and cause the defense to, shrink in. And we also had guys that could knock down threes. Now, we saw in the playoffs that it can't hurt you if you go cold at the wrong time. But it would be a hard time convincing me that a wide-open three is not the best shot you can get. And any shot or any play in sports, you're going to make and miss, based on a lot of number of factors. And I think the best thing you can do is try and get the highest value shot every time, and then trust that you put the practice in and the work in with the players that they can be confident to knock them down. So over the course of the year, we took a lot of threes. I think we probably averaged almost 40 a game, between 35 and 40. And that's exactly what we wanted to do. And to be honest, I think what hurt us was not so much our threes, but sometimes we didn't finish at the rim as well as we could have. And that could be something to improve for the future. But overall, we did a good job of cutting down the mid-range and the long twos, which some guys can hit. Some guys like a Kobe, maybe in his prime, and maybe a handful of players every year are great at those mid-range shots, and they're good shots for them. But on the course of the average player, it's a low-value shot compared to a three or a paint shot.
Very interesting. The analytics in all sport, across all sports, has really been growing by leaps and bounds. Has it been difficult to kind of keep up with just this deluge of numbers and sorting out the what's significant and what's not?
It's definitely tough. I like to think that I was on board the analytics train. I don't necessarily have the best mind to be an analytics type guy in the front office, which is fine for me. I'm a coach and I like doing that, but I think that I can kind of be a bit of a hybrid of a guy that understands like both philosophies, the side that thinks that you gotta let the players play and, take a good shot, take your shot. And also I can understand the analytics side where it's like, threes or paint, you can't foul guys, things like that.
Yeah.
There is a ton of numbers out there. Like, everybody has their own numbers that they like. I think that the biggest thing is to try and keep it simple enough where the players can kind of relate and understand.
Sure.
And also, you know, look at enough things and be willing to listen to people and be willing to adapt your own philosophies to figure out, you know, maybe your best four or five key factors. And that's basically what we did in Maine this year. We had five or six kind of analytical type stats that we tracked every game. And I'm sure some of the players probably ignored it, but they did know that if they wanted to stay in the game, they could, you know, had to play a certain way. And it kind of worked out for me either way. If they understand, great. If they don't understand, they want to play and they'll do it, you know, the way we want them to do it. And I'm sure it's going to change, but you can see it in the front office. When I go to Boston to work with the Celtics when the D-League season is done or before it starts, I sit at a desk beside three other, or in a cubicle with three other basically math geniuses, and they're sitting at a computer all day. They're running formulas. They're running algorithms. They're trying to predict things. They're tracking things. And I love sitting in there because they know everything about every stat imaginable, every player, and they have a different outlook on things. And every year I try to bring something to them to kind of get their approval, so to speak. And I think that I do a good job, at least best I can, of being, a hybrid between the pure analytical geek and the player's coach type guy. And I think that's a comfort level that I can stay with.
Sure. Well, you shouldn't sell yourself too short. I do believe you have a degree in economics.
I have a degree in economics. I didn't attend all the classes, but I managed to squeeze by. And that definitely helps. I mean, at least on paper, if a guy sees my resume, they think I'm smarter than I am, and they might talk to me. But I try to keep it simple with the stats.
Right on.
I know that long twos are bad.
Right on. We're in the middle of the NBA playoffs, and we're seeing that, you know, the Golden State Warriors, who were, you know, so hot from three and breaking records with three-pointers, and it may have looked very good from an analytics point of view, but seemed to be in a bit of a pinch since they're going cold the last couple games.
Yeah, to be honest, I've heard some of the people that are kind of anti-analytics or not quite buying in as much would say that those type of teams in the NBA can run into trouble in the playoffs when they get against a great defensive team. If at the end of the day, to create those open shots on the outside, you got to have someone that's a threat inside, you know, the traditional post up or guy who can slash off the dribble and get to the rim. And, you know, maybe during the regular season over 82 games, sometimes defenses are a little bit lax or, you know, guys get hot. But in the playoffs, if you know, when you watch those games, guys are playing hard right from the opening tip. And they're scouting more, and you know, they're worn down a little bit. All those things, I think, are factors. And I think, if anything, you got to have a multi-faceted attack. You got to have a couple guys that can get to the rim. You got to have a post-up guy, and then I think the best thing is to surround them with shooters, because then they'll space the floor, and the defense is going to have to pick their poison. Whereas if you don't have a great finisher at the rim, like we didn't have in Maine this year, sometimes defenses can just say, fine, we'll play one-on-one with this guy, make him, you know, shoot a tough layup, and he's probably going to miss more than 50%. That's better than giving these guys an open look at three. And it's tough to play as a three-point shooting team when you can't make the defense pull into the paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure what the protocol is with the NBA championship trophy. I mean, if the Cavs win, does Tristan Thompson get to bring that trophy home for a parade and whatnot?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think it's quite like the Stanley Cup where it's cut and dry. Here's your day or your 2 days, and you got the keeper of the cup or whatever that guy's name is.
Yeah.
But I do know that when Corey Joseph with the Spurs won last year, just from following social media, I see that every now and then the trophy, maybe once or twice, the trophy's been in Toronto. For events, or he brought it to his old high school and things like that. So I think it's safe to say that if the Cavs win, that the Larry O'Brien Trophy will be making a tour of Toronto, perhaps during Caravana. I don't know.
Wow.
Everyone, being in Toronto right now for training camp and having watched the last three games in local establishments here, I know everyone's rooting for him. And I also had the chance to watch in person the first round series against Boston. And to be quite honest with you, you know, Boston, I thought, outplayed them a lot of the time. even though they got swept, but it seemed every game Tristan would just kill them with three or four timely offensive rebounds, either put it back himself or kick it out and they'd hit a three, and that would be the end of Boston's kind of little run or comeback. So I'm definitely on board with his efforts, and like I said, I've seen firsthand, and I've seen him since then, that I think he's been probably the second most valuable player in that team next to LeBron. I suppose Dellavedova could be argued now, but I don't think they'd be here if it wasn't for Thompson.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think in an interview he said that his idol growing up was Dennis Rodman.
Nice.
So there you go. He gets it from there, and he may not have gone so eccentric yet, which may be a good thing, but he's putting up great numbers on the glass.
Yeah, no question. I mean, if he can even put up a percentage of Rodman's numbers and not be the distraction off the court that Rodman was, I'm sure he'd be valuable and have a really long career and probably win a couple titles. I know he and LeBron have the same agent, so if he can hang around LeBron for a few more years, I'm sure those guys can win a couple rings.
There's definitely some very interesting storylines developing, both short term and long term, with Thompson there in Cleveland. So, Scotty, I know you're a very busy guy, and I want to thank you for this interview. I do have a couple of questions. We talked about the Canadian team, the NBA, and the D League. Maybe everybody in at Lakehead may want to know, and it may be a simple answer, but what's your best memory at Lakehead, basketball or otherwise? And I know that's a big one, but
yeah, it's a tough one. I think about this every now and then. I often think about those years. I actually was talking about kind of our decade the other night to the players here, and how we started off so poorly, but we kept working and got some right pieces together to play together, and we ended up having a great run that has basically helped launch my own career, which I'll always be grateful to those guys for. I think I definitely have to say that winning the OUA championship and beating Carleton down at McMaster in the OUA Final Four was going to be tough to beat that one. It was kind of us arriving on the stage, so to speak, and Carleton, we may have not gotten them again my last 2 years, but they haven't forgotten that 15, 16-point beating, whatever we gave them. And it's safe to say that now because I don't have to play against Dave Smart anymore. So that was a great one. I still remember the feeling when, JJ hit a three and kind of iced the game. I remember walking from one end of the bench to the other and just, thinking about it. I'm actually getting choked up right now just thinking about it. And, cutting down the net, seeing U3's, family there cheering, handing everyone a cigar after, and I got into the locker room after the game and the guys dumped the Gatorade on me. Like that whole night was just, it was going to be hard to top that unless I win an NBA championship sometime down the road. And then probably the other one was my second last game, which was, the national semifinal against Ottawa. It was in Ottawa. Everyone expected Ottawa and Carleton to be in the final. We were banged up. We had lost Ryan Thompson earlier to injury. Greg Carter and Use were both banged up. And it was our last run, and everybody just stepped up. And, I can remember yelling after the game to anyone who would listen that we ruined the party in Ottawa and we were going to the finals. And that was a great weekend. We couldn't get it done, but even just the memory of, the night after the final game, I believe it was yourself and me and Coach Erdman, Coach English. We may have welcomed the sunrise that night, and just being able to share those kind of things with your close friends and being able to celebrate together, those are kind of the things that I miss the most and I'll never forget.
Yeah, that was a unforgettable weekend, to be sure. You, me, both, brother. Away from, it's hard to go after that question, but away from, Lakehead and basketball, I know a lot of people in Thunder Bay, I still get asked quite frequently? You know, have you been in touch with Coach Morrison and this and that? But I mean, the Thunder Bay community is something very special. You know, all cold weather aside, there's a lot of warmth here in the Thunder Bay community. And I mean, is there something perhaps that you'll miss about or your best memory of Thunder Bay and the people and the place and the landscape and everything?
I think, you know, I'll always miss the going to the Thunderdome. I mean, if I could keep working hard and continue to reach my goals as a coach, I'm sure I'll play in much bigger arenas. But it's going to be tough to ever beat the feeling of, you know, walking through those padded doors with about 9 minutes left in warm-up and, you know, the place is packed and the warm-up music is going and guys are dunking in the warm-ups and, you know, just going down to the other team's bench and knowing that, you know, we're going to kick these guys' ass. Because it's like not only the 12 guys on the bench in uniform, but the coaches and the, you know, video guys and the play-by-play guys up in the booth and, you know, the 1,200 whatever fans that are there, everyone's just on board and everyone has your back and you can do no wrong. It took a while to win the people over in Thunder Bay, and rightly so. We weren't winning when I first arrived there, but, you know, when I left, I felt like any time we went anywhere, it was really a citywide team that we were putting on the floor, and we knew everyone had our back. It's not the same in America, let me tell you. The team we had this year, we set numerous franchise records in Maine, you know, best team ever in Maine, this and that. And, you know, we lost that one playoff game at home, and sure enough, you can hear the fans behind me, you know, getting on my case, heckling me, calling me everything but the kitchen sink. And I just kind of chuckled to the guys in the locker room after, the other coaches, like, man, I know I'm in America when, you know, you can set all these records and you're basically one step below Jesus one night, and then the next night you're one step above Satan. So that's probably what I'll never have again and what I'll always miss the most. Yeah. But you're right. Thunder Bay is a special place. Many nights I come home from the gym and, you know, wish I could be back on the porch where we used to hang out with our coaches and the people that were in our circle. And it was a special time, man. No question about it. And it's just kind of the price, I guess, of chasing your dreams. Is sometimes you got to leave some of that stuff behind, even though you'd probably prefer to keep it.
Now, I was glad to get that last letter. From you to the Lakehead basketball alumni that went out a couple of weeks ago about homecoming coming up this October, and of course the Wall of Fame induction. We've got a couple of basketball players being in Perro, of course, who's coached and played for many, many years, and Don Holmstrom, who was a stud back in the late 60s with the men's basketball team. But I know your words resonated in that letter to the guys about, you know, continuing on, you know, this legacy and continuing to build it and to keep it strong.
I wasn't really sure what I was going to say when I sat down to write the email or the letter. At the end of the day, the one thing we always had at Lakehead, no matter if we were winning or losing, was that we believed, and I still believe it, that we were the closest team in the country every year. And it was because of the different, you know, kind of hurdles or challenges, whatever you want to say, that we had, I think, just being in Thunder Bay and maybe playing for me when I was being hard on the guys and things like that, you know, whether it was just traveling from home, being away from home for, usually I ask the guys to be away for 11 months of the year. You know, getting up at 6:30 twice a week, or 5:30, I should say, to go to practice, and, you know, dodging deer on the road on the way to practice, and, having to shovel out to get there, and all those kind of things. The road trips that we had, I mean, I think we had three different road trips where we were on the road for like 12, 13 days at a time. And just all of that trying to get ourselves better to be, you know, the championship team. And we came really, really close, probably closer than just about everyone expected. And I think that even though we all move on to different things or different players and coaches and stuff, we can't forget that those times, because those times help shape who we all are. And I know if it's true for me, and if it's true for me, it's got to be true for the players too, because they were the ones that are putting out the most effort. So I think that if I have any role on the team now, it's just to try and maybe keep that 10-year period of guys together best I can. And I know the guys do a good job too, but, I mean, those type of friendships never die. Usually you don't see those guys a lot, but, you know, it's the kind of friendships that when you don't see someone for 3 years and then all of a sudden you run into them, you can hit it off just like you left. It was yesterday. And I think it's important for us to keep it together and keep involved. And obviously it's important for the current team because having been in their shoes, I know how important it is to feel the support of the alumni and feel like, you know, you have people behind you, like I just finished saying about Thunder Bay. And also, you know, from a monetary standpoint, every now and then maybe getting a little bit of help with a donation or something like that, because everyone knows how cash-strapped a lot of the schools and athletic departments are. And to really get to the over the hump, everyone's got to do their part. And if we do all that and the current team sometime does win a national championship, then we all have the right to feel like we were part of it. And that's what I think we should be looking to do from here on out.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more, Scotty. Is there a particular song I could possibly play for you?
After the interview? Well, I was actually talking about a song that reminds me of something. Some song came on. I was saying how the All I Do Is Win song will always in my mind remind me of Evan. After we first made nationals the first year, we beat Ottawa. Went back to the hotel. We just kept playing that song over again. Evan just kept raising his hands in the air and just belting it out. So that one reminds me of Lakehead every time I hear it. And the other one that reminds me of Lakehead is kind of cheesy, but the Drake Started From the Bottom.
Yeah.
Because that game where we played Ottawa in the semifinal of a Final Eight a couple years ago, when they introduced our team, they put on some, you know, generic music. And then when they introduced Ottawa, they put on that song, which everyone was kind of getting fired up about at the time. It was a new song.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, I was sitting in my seat, and we had already been introduced, and they put that song on, and JJ just got angry. Like, they can't put that song on for them. We're the ones that started at the bottom. We started at the bottom. We're going to the top. And in my mind, I was laughing, but I was like, yeah, right, we did start at the bottom. Like, let's finish this off. And I don't know if you can relate those stories before we play the songs or not, but like that, those two songs I'll never get those images out of my head when I hear them.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. And I also love that song because I was that bottom from which they started.
Well, so was I. Really, JJ didn't start at the bottom. To be honest, he came all 4 years. He made nationals.
Yeah,
he's right though.
You keep on keeping on there down in Toronto and travel safe in Europe. And
all right, dude. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you. Give me a call.
All right, Sky. Thanks so much.
Have a good spring. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Pete.
Pete. Bye.